Good morning, everyone. Or afternoon. Oops, sorry. Good afternoon. I was at the dentist today, so I'm all confused about what time of day it is. Today is February 5th, and I'm going to open an informational meeting on public safety program overview. If Art and Heidi want to come up, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Art Ayer. I'm with the Chief Financial Office in the Department of Administrative Services. And with me is Heidi Moad, Governor's Policy Advisor for Public Safety. And we're here to present information on the Governor's Budget for Public Safety. Go ahead and put up the screen. Here we go. I would like to start at a very high level and talk about some of the guiding principles that develop the Governor's Budget. There are three major priorities that were used to help develop the governor's budget, and they include investing in children and families, creating good jobs, and building statewide prosperity. None of these obviously speak directly to public safety, but public safety is, I think, a foundation on which all three of these do rest. Drilling down a little bit, we have what are called on this slide 10-year goals. I think I would prefer to call them 10-year visions, vision statements. And at the bottom of the slide is what I would call the vision statement for public safety in the 10-year plan, and that is that Oregonians are safe and secure wherever they live, work, and play. The vision statement also has sub-goals and even more detailed goals below those. I will talk about some of those sub-goals a little bit later in the presentation. Some of the mechanics of developing the governor's budget, and again, this is still at a very high level, not yet drilling down to public safety in particular. The development of the governor's budget focused on priorities as opposed to programs, focused on outcomes, especially over a longer period of time as opposed to just a very narrow 2-year window, for example. We started with the 2013-15 biennium spending levels, and those were as of the February 2014 session, because the timing of the development of the budget allowed us to do that, and we didn't have additional 13-15 biennium changes. And we, of course, developed a...
And it's just arrived. Sorry to be late.
Thank you. We developed a balanced budget, which remained within the resources, and those the revenue forecast as of December 2014 showed an 11% increase from the current biennium to the coming biennium in general fund and lottery fund revenues, or about $1.8 billion. Now, turning to the actual public safety budget, what you see here is a graph that shows both the revenues and expenditures for general fund and lottery fund. And I'll focus on the right-hand side of this graph, and those of you who have been in some of the presentations this morning may have already seen some of these slides, so I apologize for any repetition that you're experiencing. On the right-hand side, you see education at the top, below that human services, and then public safety and judicial. And public safety and judicial combined total right about $3 billion, or 16%, or essentially one-sixth of the total expenditure for general fund and lottery fund. But, of course, what we're focusing here on is just public safety. We're not adding judicial into our comments. The governor does not make a recommendation on the judicial budget, and so we're focusing on public safety. Now, the public safety portion of that 16% is a little bit more than three-quarters of it. So about $2.3 billion, a little over $2.3 billion of general fund and lottery fund in public safety, a little bit less than $700 million in judicial. This might be a good time to mention the agencies that are in public safety. There are nine of them, and in order of their from largest to smallest, in looking strictly at general fund, we have Department of Corrections at the top, just over $1.5 billion, Youth Authority at about $291 million, State Police at about $275 million, Department of Justice at a little over $81 million, Criminal Justice Commission at $73.5 million, Military Department at $26.2 million, District Attorneys at $11.6 million, Department of Public Safety Standards and Training at $9.6 million, and the Board of Parole and Post-Prison Supervision at $4.7 million. So that gives you a sense from very large to very small, nine agencies within this public safety area. Another way to look at the expenditure side, this does not include the revenue side, but just the expenditure side, what you see here on the left is total funds, and this includes general fund, lottery fund, other funds, and federal funds. And you see down at the bottom, just to the right of the center of bottom, public safety and judicial at 7% of total funds in the governor's budget for 2015-17. On the right-hand side, you see general fund and lottery fund only, excluding the other funds and federal funds, and you see that public safety and judicial makes up 16% of the general fund and lottery fund in the governor's budget. And again, backing out judicial, we have about 12.5% of general fund and lottery fund for public safety, or about 1/8 of total general fund and lottery fund in the governor's budget goes to public safety agencies. I mentioned earlier the 10-year plan and goals below that vision statement. Here are the three broad goals in the 10-year plan for public safety: lowering crime rates and incarceration rates, lowering rates of child and elderly abuse, and reducing overrepresentation of minorities in the criminal justice system. And then there are strategies as well as those goals, and strategies include investing in youth and families, prioritizing proven prevention programs, and improving the coordination of programs with local communities and citizens.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I think when Art and I divided this up, I thought I would take this particular subject matter, low senators. One of the things that we're really trying to focus on here is what issues we need to solve. And of course, I don't have to tell any of you here that the increasing cost of incarcerating offenders is something we are really trying to look at and change some practices to address. Of course, the governor is particularly worried about the decline of public safety services in some rural counties, and I think you'll see that reflected in the Oregon State Police budget. We have I know it's a statewide problem among any agencies. Public safety is no different. Very aging data systems and physical infrastructure needs. I think when we look at how data sharing and analytics can really inform a much smarter approach to public safety, we need to start making some investments in how we can shore that up. We've been really looking at the mental health crises that lead to public safety crises. And I will say that while there is not a tremendous amount of money earmarked in the public safety budget for that, there is some earmarked in the health budget for that. And we've been having a lot of really intentional meetings about jail diversion and how we can invest into jail diversion with the counties.
So Heidi, you got to the answer of my question, but I wanted to find out how the governor's office was removing the silos around health, education, and criminal justice, especially around mental health, because I think one of my frustrations in this committee is we talk a lot about things that are being funded, whether it's in DHS or health or, in other silos of the budget, and we're kind of the receiving end mm-hmm. of, I would say, some systems that don't work. And so how did the governor's staff deal with that, or how did you guys work through that?
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. What we've been doing, so the mental health discussions kind of evolved out of originally meetings that we were having convened by Greg Wolf in our regional solutions. And that was meeting with the struggling counties primarily. But the consistent theme was one of our problems is we have so few jail beds as it is, and we are the first stop or sometimes the only stop as a mental health treatment facility as well. And so we heard that over and over again. And then Greg started convening meetings with Sean Colmer, the policy advisor on health, me, Greg, Wolf, and then we started bringing agencies in as well, some local counties in, some Marion County came in and gave a presentation about what they're doing as a potential pilot. Clackamas County's come in as well. And so we have been, and we continue to, frankly, have these meetings. Sean Colmer has been bringing in a lot of people as well, meeting with them separately to try to get this really rolling. And in addition to a collaboration among different agencies and different partners in the local communities, the other thing that we continue to try to really encourage is the idea of some regional collaboration around this, because it may not be financially some of the smaller, more struggling counties may not have the financial ability to invest in a state-of-the-art facility that would help with stabilizing someone in a mental health crisis. But if multiple pooled their resources, maybe we could, you know, help find a way to do that. So it continues to be a discussion, but we've been really trying to pull in the stakeholders, both at the state level and the county and city level, to try to make that happen.
That's great. I would love updates on that as we move through the session, because I think that's going to be the key to us doing this right. So
yes, and we definitely agree. The last issue that we're trying to solve, and I would say, this continues to be one of the harder areas to solve, is the overrepresentation of minorities in the criminal justice system. But we remain committed to the efforts to try to bend that curve as well.
And that particular issue, and I'm glad you have that one on as a priority, and hopefully you're having that same conversation when we talk about siloing and systems. That included in that is DHS, and I know that you're there now, because when you actually look at overrepresentation in the criminal justice system, we also have overrepresentation and longer length of stay in the foster care system, as well in our juvie system. And some of us want to begin linking some of this up to see, you know, if we can't stem this tide by taking and looking at all those systems and where can we have some earlier interventions and working with families earlier before they totally collapse. That plus, I think we can, and I'm glad it's a priority. I do hope that we bring all the other systems together, because I don't think they can work in isolation.
Co-chairs and Senator Winters, I totally agree. I can say, again, this goes back to a point I made earlier about data systems and data sharing to a certain extent. I think the more data we have, the better and smarter a conversation we can have. Just taking, for example, the youth reformation system in OYA, I mean, they're really looking at feeder systems and how that is all affecting their agency work. And I think that conversation can continue to get bigger and cut across more systems.
We need to include you in our offline discussion group that we're having with OYA and DHS and also in DOC. And we've added to that the Secretary of State's office, because looking at performance outcomes and what have you, so that we can bring some of these data systems in alliance and a better job of sharing, if you will. I'll keep you in the loop.
I would love that. Thank you, Senator. The governor's office, we try to be very thoughtful in our approach to addressing these issues. So obviously maintaining a lot of the current public safety efforts and building on some of the things we've done, like House Bill 3194 from the 2013 session, are the major approaches to how we would do this. Of course, I don't have to tell you all that it was our intention with House Bill 3194 to look at the costs that we're avoiding in both active prison bed use as well as not needing to break ground on a new prison, taking that cost-avoided amount and reinvesting that locally through our Justice Reinvestment Program. I think we've done some really interesting things with that. You know, the Criminal Justice Commission set up almost immediately regional implementation committee meetings where Mr. Schmidt from the Criminal Justice Commission would travel around the state to various regions to have, for really the first time in, that I'm aware of, conversations at the local level to really say, here is your region's prison bed use in the last quarter. Here are your trends. Here's what we're seeing. And it is making a difference. It didn't happen as fast as we thought it would, but we are really starting to see a return on just that, you know, that investment of spending that time in the local agency or in the local areas. You know, what we need to do now is to continue to encourage innovative programming with the reinvestment money. And, you know, that's where you all will come in as the session progresses. So funding community efforts to reduce prison use is a major focus and ties back to that. Diverting and reforming youth offenders, I think, in part by using the youth reformation system and just generally being smarter about how we treat youth in the system is a way that I think we can help bend the trajectory of the prison population. Probably this next piece, adding state troopers and vehicles, that may actually add a few cases to the system, but I do think it's very important to have a fully functioning state police force, particularly when you look at our rural counties that are in need of a good law enforcement presence. I feel we've talked a lot about, so I'll just mention replacing aging data systems, again, is an area that we are very interested in. And frankly, I'd throw in adding some data systems like electronic health records in our Department of Corrections system, I think is going to make a huge difference. We continue to look at strategic opportunities to address deferred maintenance and other facility needs. And finally, you know, while I mentioned earlier that the health budget has the majority of the mental health funding, we did make sure that DPSST was able to fund their mental health crisis intervention training programs fully.
Senator Winter.
Just a question, because I've had somebody in my office and that was talking about a bill to deal with not just mental health crisis but to deal with the issue of profiling training for DPSST, particularly looking at the Portland specific and so that we're ahead of the curve. We don't want to become like what's happening in the rest of the world, nation. So was there in discussion when you start talking about training and DPSST to include that within that structure or not?
Co-chairs and Senator Winters, we didn't have a real specific discussion about that. I can say, you know, and I'm sure you know, Portland Police Bureau trains separately from the department. From DPSST. So, you know, then that's not to say that other agencies don't also need to have that training, but.
Let me rephrase it. Was the conversation with policing excellence, because that's where probably if we were talking about, you know, going forward in the future, and I know we funded it last session.
In 3194.
Yeah.
And so, you know, and I did have some conversation with Chief Tigg about that, and I know that there is some interest from our, you know, officers to make certain that we're doing the best job that we can be in, whether or not, you know, you did consider
Co-chairs and Senator Winters, it's definitely something that we are aware of, that we are talking about, and I think the Center for Policing Excellence is a great place to look at continuing that conversation at a high level. And so I'm trying to remember.
I'm trying to remember,
turning
too.
to counsel here how much we
I do
funded. But I don't think we have the specific, but we would happily
I don't
circle back
mentioned.
With you on that.
I don't see it mentioned here.
This is you,
Chair. Yes. Oh, Senator Bates.
Do we have time for questions now? I don't like to.
Anytime.
Well, I want to go through.
You can ask whenever you want in this committee, Senator Bates.
Well, I wanted them to get a chance to get through everything before I ask any questions. A comment and a couple of questions. Electronic health record systems and corrections go slow. All the studies on them so far show they're not mature enough yet. They reduce efficiency by about 50%. No improved outcomes at all. So be careful. Okay. Don't invest in them yet. Another 4 or 5 years, they'll probably reach the level they're worthwhile getting, unless you're forced to, and you may be by federal law. But physicians and hospitals have gone to them because we are forced by federal law to do so under Medicare. I would, you know, avoid that as long as you could because of cost, and they're just not mature yet, but they will be, and then the value will be apparent. Then right now they're not there. Secondly, state troopers take care of, know a bunch of them in Southern Oregon. These guys are stressed to the max.
I agree with
you. Stressed to the max. I'm just waiting for a blow up. I'm waiting for one of them to make a terrible mistake. They're working horrible hours of overtime. Mm-hmm. They're going to go into counties and take care of things. Where there's no county sheriffs anymore. What's your sense of the situation across the state? I'm just talking about Southern Oregon. I don't know what the rest of the state's like. These poor guys and gals are right on the edge half the time.
Co-chairs and Senator Bates, I totally agree. They have been performing admirably given the strains on their systems. The governor's budget does add trooper bodies to the state police as well as vehicles, because one thing that Superintendent Evans talks about is he doesn't have enough vehicles in his fleet right now, so that if a trooper is called out in the middle of the night, the first stop is driving all the way into the patrol station just to switch out into the right vehicle, and then, you know, potentially doubling back to get to the crime scene that he or she needs to get to. So we did hear those concerns, and we invested in them. I would say the state of the rural counties remains poor, and, you know, we continue to meet regularly, regional solutions team members, the public safety policy advisor, the Association of Oregon Counties. We meet regularly to continue to look at strategies for how to address this. Both in general, just to shore those communities up, as well as specifically looking at their public safety issues.
Madam Chair, follow up.
Mm-hmm.
I'd love to see some numbers on amount of overtime the troopers are putting in. I'd like to see how often when they're on call but not really on duty they get called out, sleep interrupted, how often they have to go out.
Okay.
Those kind of numbers, if you've got them, to give us some idea over the last couple of years what that's looked like. Okay.
Co-chairs and Senator Bates, I don't have them now, but we'll get them for you.
Madam Chair, just Senator point Winters. Of clarity for the good senators. Last session, because of the situation and the lack of passing of levies in Southern Oregon, we actually did provide this committee and recommended, and the co-chairs agreed. I think it was about $1 million that added the troopers, because for that you guys didn't have much of anything. We've asked for a report back from them, and I'm sure that when the state police come in, they'll give us that report on, you know, their time and how much and what have you and where those gaps were. We knew that we could not provide, you know, all of the coverage, but we were hoping that the $1 million would help somewhat while some of this other discussion and dialogue would go on. But it was strictly backup where to try to help fill that gap. Because of the lack of passing levies. You know, your counties, you know, had it. Mine and Polk County also was another one that failed to pass their levies. So it's more than just Southern Oregon, my friend.
Well, I'm sure it is. I mean,
well, and I would add
that it's spotty. Jackson County is fine. Yeah. We've got, you know, Medford and Grants Pass is okay, and Ashland and Phoenix Talent are okay, but when you get over Josephine, Curry County, sometimes Klamath County, it gets thin, and those poor officers are really getting hammered. They are getting hammered.
Yeah, well, they're supposed to come back with a report on what happened during that period.
And they also, if I can follow up on Senator Winter's comment, they also shifted resources. So where officers are changed because of those levies. And so there are communities that were covered at one point that are no longer because they were shifted resources. So I'm looking forward to that report to see how they, what the needs are.
One last question.
Absolutely.
That's the last one. Mental health crisis, and I think of mental health, I think of drug and alcohol too, and your officers getting called out to take care of these issues. We're looking at this very carefully in OHA, so there'll be a lot of interaction there, and we'll probably be putting a team together to look at it more in OHA. Can you give me kind of a, what you see as the scope of it? How often do your officers, you know, city, county, state, get called out for mental health and drug and alcohol crises? I know that Marion County obviously has a crisis team that does a really great job. I'm not sure after they go out and deal with the individual, the offender or patient, whatever you want to call them, what happens after that is probably a different story. But what's the scope? How many, I mean, of the calls you go out for, how many of them involve this kind of an issue?
Co-chairs and Senator Bates, I don't have statistics that I can share with you right now. I can say anecdotally, just based on my own experience, you know, as a prosecutor in Multnomah County, I mean, you know, there are oftentimes, and certainly when you look at the people who are in the system, there are oftentimes mental health and or drug and alcohol issues. I don't think there's any question that it is a pervasive problem in the criminal justice system. And that's one of the things that we want to use that justice reinvestment money for, is to invest in the community programs that would take innovative approaches to people with addiction issues, mental health issues that are higher risk to reoffend. That's really where a lot of the counties are trying to focus their dollars, is to divert people from our prison beds and really pour those resources into trying to get them back on track.
Thank you.
I do have one final slide, and that is a comparison at a very high level between the governor's budget and the co-chair's framework. And this focuses on general fund and lottery funds, and again, zeroes in only on public safety. And what you see here on this slide is that the governor's budget has a general fund lottery fund budget of $2.3 billion. And well, I better not round it quite as much because we'll come out the same if I do. But $2,329,500,000 general fund and lottery funds versus the co-chair's framework of $2,273,000,000, essentially. So the co-chair's framework is about $56.6 million lower than the governor's budget. There are not a lot of specifics, as I understand it, in the co-chair's framework. There are a few items mentioned, such as the Justice Reinvestment Initiative and community corrections caseload. But other than that, it seems that there isn't a lot of detail there.
I think that is right. There's okay. Not a lot of detail there.
And that's all I have, and be happy to take any additional questions.
Any questions?
Madam Chair.
Mm-hmm. Representative Wisnett.
It's from my understanding, I guess. I was briefed by state police today. So does the governor's budget have all the option packages that they're planning to present as far as more vehicles, more troopers, the 17 people for the fish and wildlife? Or is that not in the governor's budget? So that's even more money short.
Madam Chair and Representative Wisnett, the governor's budget does include, I'm just reaching for a piece of paper that has some of the details, it does include the 20 troopers and 33 trooper vehicles for state police.
Okay.
It also includes, let's see, the other item that you mentioned.
17 people from fishing.
Yeah. The 17 positions, or essentially it's the funding to fund those 17 positions. In the Fish and Wildlife Division of State Police, yes, that is
in the governor's.
That is in the governor's budget, yes.
Okay, so, Madam Chair, so the options they're looking for is the new data equipment and the two locations.
Those are also in,
in
the governor's budget, yes.
So everything they need is in the governor's budget. Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Any other questions? That's all for today, right?
That's it.
Yeah.
Can I say thank you to Heidi?
You can do whatever you want, Senator Winters.
You know, I'm glad you have, you know, that you're going to be here with us, because I want to thank you for the work that you did to help us with 3194. And also, I think it's good that you're doing both human services and public safety. You know, that it kind of, and we just saw you earlier, so we're looking forward to having to work for you. And now you're two out of the three big agencies, so you've got a huge portfolio.
Lucky gal. Co-chairs and Senator Winters, thank you. I am also looking forward to working in both areas and with you all as well.
So you get Senator Bates and I twice a day.
Sorry about that. Actually, when I looked at my computer and went through the first five slides, I thought I had the wrong slide show up, and then it started changing a little bit because it was the same one we saw mm-hmm. this morning, and you were here. I went, geez, I've got this, how do I get out of this thing and get to the right one, you know?
Yes.
So, right. Thank you.
If there are no other questions, I'm going to close this informational hearing. And nothing, Ms. Gilbert, for the good of the order?
See you Monday at 1.
All right. Close. Close.